Okay, good morning, everybody. And I can tell already that the conference is going to be great because you guys are actually all here. You're starting on time. It's, you know, pretty good. I want to thank NFB and also AAPD in terms of sponsoring this conference, this seminar. I want to tell you that long before I ever did anything with NFB, Dr. Tenbrook was an inspiration to me because of his work in constitutional law. And the person whom I have followed significantly in terms of my legal scholarship is someone named Robin West, who often quotes Dr. Tenbrook in her work. So just to let you know that he's had significant impact in a number of communities. I also want to take this moment to thank someone who's not here, but because I'm pretty sure she's on the train from D.C. right now. But you heard her name among the list of people in the steering committee, and that's Jennifer Mathis. Jennifer Mathis has worked for me for the past year as a special assistant at the EOC. Today and tomorrow are her last days with me at the commission, and she is spending them here as a member of the steering committee. So I think it's appropriate to give her a thanks that I therefore expect, even though I'm going to just say it once here, she's going to hear it at least 20, 30 times, okay? Because everyone who sees her today needs to say, I hear you're fantastic, okay? So when you see Jennifer Mathis, just say, I hear you're fantastic. And the reason she is that during the 8 months that we were negotiating the ADA Amendments Act of 2008, and there are a number of people in this room who are very active in that, I was representing the Epilepsy Foundation. Jennifer Mathis was there at the Bazelon Center. And the two of us were the two main lawyers doing a lot of the legal content stuff, working with folks from APD and Epilepsy and NDRN and Nickel, you know, who are doing a lot of the political stuff. So when I was named by President Obama to be a commissioner, I said yes, largely because I knew the EOC would need to be doing regulations to implement the ADA Amendments Act of 2008. And I absolutely wanted those regulations to be good. I wanted them to be strong. I wanted them to be clear. I wanted them to carry out what the amazing work the disability community had been able to do in the ADA Amendments Act. And one of the people that I turned to right away was Jennifer Mathis. And I said, you have to come work with me. And she's like, you know, I'm a litigator. I don't do, you know. I said, you have to come work so we can do these regulations together. And she said, okay, but only if I can also work on supported employment. I said, fine. And what's supported employment? Because I just hadn't done that in my work. I had, you know, the only thing I'd been doing in disability rights in the past few years had been the ADA amendments. But whatever Jennifer said, I said, fine. And you're going to see in terms of my talk today that we have actually done a fair amount in terms of helping to move things forward in supported employment at the EOC during the past year. We also, as I know you all know, got out 2 weeks ago bipartisan regulations implementing the ADA Amendments Act of 2008, which is really quite amazing. So whenever anyone asks me how I'm doing, I'm like, great, I am great, you know, because I've actually done what I came here to do at the commission. And now, you know, there's lots of other stuff we can do now, too. But okay. So what I want to talk about is increasing the employment of people with disabilities. That's the subject of this opening talk. And this is the moment, I think, to talk about how we actually increase the employment of people with disabilities. You know, my good friend Bob Williams always quotes FDR, "True individual freedom cannot exist without economic security and independence." Right? True individual freedom cannot exist without economic security and independence. From FDR's 1944 State of the Union. If people with disabilities cannot have economic security and independence, people with disabilities do not have true individual freedom. And right now, in this country, there are hundreds thousands of people with disabilities who are not being employed to the level of their ability. And that's horrific. Well, we know that the ADA, the Americans with Disabilities Act, that many of us worked very hard on 20 years ago, did not make a huge dent in the unemployment rate of people with disabilities. This was due to a number of factors. One, the very quick weakening of the definition of disability in the ADA by the courts. Two, the nature of discrimination. You can tell someone they can't discriminate based on a disability. You can say there'll be legal redress. And let me tell you, shock of shocks, there will still be discrimination. And it's not at all because you're using a wheelchair or blind or I found out you had diabetes. It's, you know, that other guy went to Tufts. I really like people who went to Tufts. I mean, lots of people have discovered you can pass a law saying don't discriminate based on race, sex, religion, national origin, and you don't get rid of discrimination. Third, in terms of figuring out the impact of the ADA, we have a problem in terms of data collection. That is, we're not actually collecting data on the full range of people with disabilities. So it's hard to know whether there's been, let's say, an increase in the number of people with HIV infection or cancer or diabetes or epilepsy who have been able to keep their jobs, you know, that their unemployment rate is lower. We have no idea because that's not, our employment statistics are not matched up with those types of disabilities. They're matched up with other disabilities, disabilities where they're asking you, are there things that functionally make it difficult for you to work? And lots of disabilities, the only difficulty is other people's heads, you know, not anything that's going to make it difficult for you. Okay, so those were some of the problems in terms of why the ADA didn't make a dent. But I believe we are at a moment in time where various points are converging. If we act and act well, we can leverage those points of conversion. But it will require action on our part, because otherwise they will just be disparate things that are happening now. Here are the three major points of conversion right now. One, we have a revitalization of the ADA because of the ADA Amendments Act of 2008 from 2 years ago, and because of the final regulations that just came out. I cannot begin to tell you the number of people who seem to think that now the ADA Amendments Act is in effect. And that would be employers who are thinking that. You know, somehow like they were just waiting for the regulations and now they're focused on what the law requires. Even though, of course, the law has been in effect for 2 years. But we have a moment now when employers are out there learning about this revitalized ADA. This is the 6 months to the year to the 18 months. This is the moment. If we're going to be getting into their heads about reasonable accommodation, this is the moment. Okay. Two, we are finally seeing the fruits of our labors around some of the Olmstead litigation. People are moving out of institutions. People are living in communities. The people like Jennifer Mathis and her colleagues who are working not only on getting people out of an institution, but once they get out, to make sure that they can be in some competitive employment, not just bus to a day center somewhere and spend the day there the way they would have spent it in the institution. So the Olmstead stage two of making sure we have integrated employment, which can include supported employment elements. And finally, we are creating a new generation of young people with disabilities that expect that they can work. I mean, they are now getting the message in their educational settings that they can work. So we have this convergence of a revitalized ADA, a moving people out of institutions, young people with disabilities getting a different message in education. But to have this convergence have an impact, one needs to have a strategic plan for moving all of those pieces together. And that's a strategic plan that engages people with disabilities, government and employers. Those are the actors that need to be engaged in the plan. In addition, we need a compelling narrative. We need a rhetoric, a message, a story that speaks our message of employment of people with disabilities, not some of the other messages that I think we hear. So I'm going to talk a little bit about strategic plan, a little bit about the messaging, and then I will shut up and take questions. All right. Strategic plan. I think it's about looking at these elements and then leveraging them, right? So on the first element, the revitalizing of the ADA, I cannot tell you how sweet it is to sit, as I just did yesterday, I was in a webinar for RILA, the Retail Industry Leaders Association. So these are the leaders of the retail industry, i.e. not just every regular retail person, but, you know, the big box stores, right? And unlike every seminar that I went to from 1990 to 1992 on the ADA, where the whole first hour and a half was, here's the definition of disability, and here's all the different ways in which you cut people out, right? Now, it was me and Commissioner Lipnick, my Republican colleague, gave the first 30 minutes on, here's the new regulations. And basically, it's more straightforward and simple. And here's how, and here's all the folks who are covered, and here's how they're covered. Okay, so we sort of gave that summary. And then the two management lawyers who talked said, so listen, just don't be dealing with the coverage issue. Like, just assume, basically, that someone's going to have a disability. Let's move to the reasonable accommodation conversation. I mean, it was day and night, you know, day and night. In terms of the focus of attention. And then we had this wonderful 30, 45-minute conversation about reasonable accommodation, job descriptions, essential functions, etc. Now, it's going to take a lot of repetition to get this into employer heads. Okay? It's like anyone who was hearing some of that stuff in the seminar, webinar yesterday, anyone listening, you know, they're not like tomorrow going to turn around and have a great reasonable accommodation process. I can tell you that. Okay? So it is our job, this is our moment in the next 6, 12, 18 months to really come back at people and explain what the reasonable accommodation requirement is. Now, from the EEOC, I feel we have a huge responsibility to make sure we get that guidance out and we get that training out. So I can commit to you that we will be doing that from the EEOC, that we will be explaining to people how, yes, you can have an essential function. Yes, you can have a production standard, but you can't just assume that someone with a disability can't meet those functions or that standard, and you have to engage in an interactive process with them to see if there's an accommodation they need to get that. Now, we're going to be out there explaining that reasonable accommodation includes leave issues, time off, whether it's doctor stuff or other things that are needed in order to be qualified for the job. So we're going to do that, but it has to be the actors. These are three actors here. You know, there's the government, and that's the one I'm in for the next few years, but there's people with disabilities and there's employers. All three actors have got to be engaged in pushing this message. By the way, I think there's also going to be, thankfully, a renewed focus on qualification standards under the ADA. Because you can't have, if a qualification standard screens out or tends to screen out a person with a disability, and that's basically under the current definition, that's really any impairment that's not transitory minor. If the qualification standard screens out that person, the business has to demonstrate why that standard is job-related and consistent with business necessity. Okay, so you've got a rule that says you have to stand 8 hours. That's what we've always done. Well, if that's screening out people with disabilities, you need to show why that's job-related and consistent with business necessity. And if you can show that it is, if that person who can't stand 8 hours is covered under the first prong of the definition, has an impairment that substantially limits, let's say, their musculoskeletal function, then you have to give them a reasonable accommodation. So there are going to be two points at which employers are going to have to stop, think, and justify their qualification standards. Initially, really just if it impacts any impairment, and then giving reasonable accommodation to those who might need it, if it is job-related and consistent with business necessity. All right. The ADA, this revitalized ADA, which is going to be revitalized if we keep breathing air into its lungs, okay? The regulations are out there, but it has to, you know, keep pumping that, all right? That ADA is a necessary but not sufficient condition for better employment of people with disabilities. It's necessary because you got to get through the first point of having someone feel they can't just discriminate against you. You know, you got to get through the basic level of being able to get an accommodation so long as it's not an undue hardship. But it's not going to by itself ensure that people who are coming out of institutions get supported employment. It's not on its own going to get employers to sort of affirmatively reach out and say, huh, how do I make sure I have full diversity in my workplace, including people with disabilities? So on that, that's where one needs the convergence of different government agencies. And I'm going to leave it to other speakers during the day or Q&A period about, you know, sort of what each of those agencies should be. I mean, you can imagine them, Department of Labor, Department of Ed, Rehab Services, Social Security. I will only say two things on this. One, I think that having someone like Bob Williams at the Social Security Administration is huge for us, and we want to leverage that in terms of changing the mindset in Social Security. And two, I think having Pat Hsu at the head of OFCCP has been huge for us on the issue of what the Obama administration can do. It's often about people. And as I'm sure you all know, OFCCP put out an advance notice of proposed rulemaking that under Section 503 of the Rehabilitation Act, which governs government contractors have had to set out targets and goals based on race and sex. They've never had to do that for disability, never. And her office put out an advance notice of proposed rulemaking saying, we think this could be a good way to get people to focus on whether they have people with disabilities in their workplace. And she got in lots of comments. I think we as a community need to be keeping our eyes on that and ensuring that there is ultimately a regulation that will force employers to have to think about whether they have diversity. Now, there are a lot of various complicated pieces to it, but the bottom line is you need the stick. You need some stick. All right. Let me say a few words about rhetoric and messaging. You know, at the risk of quoting Bob Williams for the third time or second time, I'm just going to do it because made an impact on me when he said to me a few months ago that the historical flaw in the employment of people with disabilities sort of effort was that people talked about or let other people talk about the fact as if that getting a job was itself the goal. Like it was such a huge, difficult thing that if you just got a job, that was it. You were done, you know, because you didn't really expect people to do it, to get it. And so it didn't really matter how good the job was, whether the job allowed room for promotion, you know, what the quality of the job was. And when he said that, I remember thinking, like, you don't hear people say, oh, you have red hair and you have a job. Oh, that's so impressive. It's like, yeah, I have red hair and I have a job because I need to buy things and have a house and pay my rent, and right? Okay. We have to change the expectation of people with disabilities, sometimes families of people with disabilities, employers, and general society that, yeah, people with disabilities should be expected to have jobs just for the same reasons everyone else does. And that is about being able to be independent and being able to, you know, buy your food and rent your own apartment. we need to be out there changing that rhetoric, because it's not going to happen on its own. And we are in a scary moment in time now. I will tell you, you know, the stuff around Tea Party, the stuff around budget, there is an effort to just get rid of government. And we are not going to move forward as people with disabilities. And that's people with manifest disabilities, people with hidden disabilities. Right? I mean, I have anxiety disorder that's medicated. No one knows I have a disability unless I come out and tell them. Right? But when I come out and tell them, if they're my employer, I can make myself vulnerable. Right? But no one expects me not to have a job. But that's because in their mind, there's the them, people with disabilities for whom, oh, how inspiring it is that you have a job. And then all the rest of us that might have some medical conditions. Okay, we got to get rid of that divide, and we have to get people to understand that all of us need jobs and that some of us face more stigma and discrimination and therefore more likely to need to use the ADA. Some of us may need more supported employment and therefore may need some other funding sources. But we all need jobs for the same reason, to be independent, which means to be free. We are at a moment in time, folks. We have a potential convergence right now over the next few years where we could make a difference. I would urge you to go on the web and listen to the hearing that Senator Harkin's office folks did on employment of people with disabilities. Go on the web to see the hearing that we put together at EEOC on employment of people with mental disabilities. There's a moment in time now where the need is being presented very clearly, but we need a strategic plan that engages all the relevant actors, and we need the right rhetorical message. And maybe 5-10 years after the ADA Amendments Act of 2008, we will see a dent in the unemployment rate. That's our challenge. I'm certainly ready to try to work on it, and I am thrilled to be looking at it in an audience that I know is ready as well. Thank you.